So yeah, it's just me, Ben, Aaron, and Kai today. I saw Eddie pop in on Skype a couple times, but he might be having connection problems or something. Not sure about Bill and Andrew. I'll ping Bill real quick. But I wrote up an agenda, and there were a couple items I wanted to hit specifically, but I thought we could just see, you know, if anybody's who's on the call today has any items that you've been working on or thinking about that you want to just open up and talk about a little bit. So first of all, for the 331 release, so I sent a message out to the list yesterday, and it seems to me that we're ready to start pushing a release out there. I did a review of the tracker items, and it seems like the one that seems like it would be a candidate for 331 that hasn't been addressed yet is around the DS location, sort of overly verbose or warning messages that probably shouldn't be printed. And I've been following that work. I was hoping Eddie would chime in today, but Ben, maybe you know, since I think this was related to the support for file stuff from last release. I was just looking at the code and couldn't figure out like if it just made sense to completely drop the warnings. Like, what would happen if the warnings were dropped? Are they ever actually indicating a useful?
Let's see. Yeah. I'm looking at the patch that I think Eddie attached to. That we're talking about 665, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That. Okay. So this is the else down there is if the protocol matches. Yeah, there's some overlap in functionality there, but basically what that's saying is that it's there's a URL indicated in the location that we don't know what to do with, right?
Yeah.
And so, I guess what that would indicate right now would be an object maybe was ingested into Fedora under the 3.3 rubric and then exported or journaled to Fedora and an earlier version of Fedora 3. Because yeah. Typically we choke on those on ingest. So that's the situation I can imagine.
Okay.
That coming up then. But the thing that was coming up, the issue was not file DS locations, right? It was internal.
Yeah.
DS
exactly.
Locations. I'm sorry to cut. Go ahead.
I was just going to say those. I know we've got another issue out there that Aaron's filed about making sure those are opaque. And I kind of wonder, first of all, it's unfortunate, but it's not actually a URI in there, even though it is pointing to some internal location. But I was kind of wondering, like, if you look at the bigger picture here, this is happening in DO Manager and, is the long-term view of this that really in all cases we're delegating to the eventually high level storage, but we're delegating to the layer below to, you know, either resolve that or not.
My opinion on this, and I guess it's good that Aaron is on the line for this, but even back when we were looking at the file system or file URI and just stuff, I felt like it was unfortunate that that those validations of URIs for locations tend to happen in these kind of statically encoded ways for different implementations. When to me it seemed like whatever the relevant IO manager is should basically be asked whether it supports a location. You know what I'm saying? Like right now in this example, it checks to see whether it matches a regex for URIs.
Yeah.
And just I guess for reference, it checks to see whether it matches that regular expression. That makes some presumptions about what the format of that is, and I believe that actually excludes things that are valid URIs. So ideally, I would think that rather than using that URI, there'd be some API that the DO manager uses to decide whether something looks valid, locally valid or not.
Yeah. So I guess in this point of the code, the whole reason for this URL or for this block of code here is to determine whether when somebody passed in, like this is a new data stream, somebody passed in a URL for it. It's to determine really whether we need to get the content. And if we do, right here is a call to
the permanent store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, I don't know, the...
It also, well, I can think of one thing maybe right away is that you might say, or we might say that warn is too high a level for that message. If we're not considering it, because at that point there's another place where we audit those DS locations for validity in more broadly defined, which is it's in the utilities. Let me see if I can dig this up really fast. Maybe it's a validation utility. Yeah, validation utility.
Okay.
That's in...
here it is. I'm going to paste it here.
Is this where we have the validate URLs? Yes. There's a public static method for validating URLs there. So that is the place where, again, statically encoded. But where the validity of something is marked up. Over here in the DO manager, I think that message has to do with whether it thinks it will be able to resolve it or not. We might say it's you could dial the priority of that message down to info. I don't think it's there are some kind of exotic circumstances where seeing that message makes sense, but certainly not in all of them. And then the other corollary is that whatever the internal DS location is needs the utility that this validation here needs to not choke on an internal location.
So is it the case where, I mean, right here, Euro protocol matcher, that's doing like a really rough check to see if this looks kind of like a URI.
Right.
And is it, would it, I don't know if it's logical to do this, but like the first question that occurs to me is, why can't we use the other validation utility?
That is also a good question. And that probably is the, why wouldn't you there? You're at the data stream, so you should have access to the control group.
Yeah, so manage data streams, maybe ingested using file. Oh, I guess in this case, the net maybe needs to be wider.
Mm.
It, because you can see that it's actually allowing things with the temp prefix to come in via manager.
Right.
Whereas, default deal manager. 1150 something. Yeah. So I guess it is a wider net in this case. I don't know. Another way to approach this is like, it's just to make the warning quieter, because we know in this case it's really most of the time this actually doesn't provide any extra value.
Yeah, I mean, I think ideally for me it would be because it's not a totally invalid thing that it's trying to do, would just be fixing the logic so that it knows about temps and internal URIs.
So those, the current, let's see. So there's one idea is just to not use the validation utility, since that's a narrower net and is used in other contexts.
Right.
But then in this case, just change the logic so that the warning is really only printed if the protocol or the if statement up there on if Euro protocol matches or whatever, uh-huh, should also allow for the case where it looks like an internal URL.
Yeah, actually, and as we talk about it, I'm realizing because that works different than the validate URL, that's just a regex. So that's not even, the file URIs in older versions are not even going to trigger that because they'll match that pattern.
Okay.
So it's only for, and I think even the temp URIs will match that pattern.
Yeah, they should, because they look like URIs.
So I think the... I think that Eddie's right in his report that we should just be accepting the internal DS locations.
Yeah. So, one way to do that is to have like a sophisticated way of coming up with a pattern that matches both, or just saying
the other way to do it,
if it matches this pattern, or, at this point we already know what that would look like. And I think Eddie's patch, included something like getting that ID. But I looked at the patch and wasn't sure, because the person he was talking with, for some reason wasn't able to get it to work, even though I think they might have just had a class loader issue or something.
Yeah, so I see what Eddie has done is, rather than throw the or put that message out when when it doesn't match that URL pattern, he actually builds the internal location, that what would be the internal location for that string, and then compares it to that. Right.
So
it met that, or else if it's not, well then, okay, so now the debug, I'm not even sure why the second part of that debug is, or the where the debug statement is.
Yeah, that's...
I don't understand how you get there.
That's where I got a little lost, too. It seems like if... I mean, if we took the chunk that he's got there of string... I mean, right at the beginning, he's inserted this new string mm-hmm. ID equals PID plus data stream ID plus version ID. That right there could be put right in that if statement at the top as one right. of the conditions. If it matches this or it equals, you know, or the... DS location equals exactly ID, then do all this stuff.
Right.
Otherwise, do the warning as it was before.
And arguably, in terms of performance, we probably want the check against the internal location to happen first, because it seems like a lot of people use managed data streams, and we might as well shortcut the...
Yeah, that's true, because it's
all business.
Regex, looking at regexes is a little...
Okay.
But really should be if ID equals or DS location equals ID.
But I guess I'd like to get in touch with Eddie about what the very last clause down there means, because if I'm reading it right, it's saying you have a location that doesn't match, that doesn't look like a URL in course terms, and is also not the internal ID for the data stream location. So what is it down there? What could it be? And if you are in that very last clause, then maybe debug isn't even the appropriate thing there. Maybe it's actually an error.
Yeah,
I don't know. I was actually looking through, you know, while we were talking. I still can log on to like the NSDL service and stuff like that, and I actually see a lot of these messages there. And it looks to me like I can't quite explain why these messages. Let me see. Let me paste it into the IRC. Yeah. So it looks like, you know, in this case, the inoperable DS location blah given for blah, where those two blobs seem to be the same. You know, they both look like valid internal IDs. And I believe it's checking the equality of those two things, which look equal to me.
It's not even doing an equality check here. It's just the fact that they're equal in this case is just an artifact of the way the warning message is written. It's intended that it wasn't expected when this warning message was written that they would ever be equal, because they're, in one case it's just given for whatever is intended to be like, just to give you a hint as to what, which data stream has the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a way of indicating which one does. But in the case, the thing that's in quotes is like, turns out that that's what's actually the DS location. So the message itself, because of the fact that it happens in these scenarios, is confusing. I think if we address the fact that it shouldn't really happen for managed content where the data stream, where the DS location looks like this, then one, you just wouldn't get these messages. But two, if you did get a message like this, it would be in the case where the DS location was some weird URI or string that just Fedora couldn't interpret ever. And it would say something like inoperable DS location, blah, for HDL 220, blah, 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 blah. So I guess we want to check with Eddie to see what was intended by the end, by that last else clause.
Mm-hmm.
it does look a little strange because, okay, so if we look at it, I mean, it's saying, do this stuff. if it matches, but then if it doesn't match, and in one case it doesn't match because, it's not even equal to the ID, then warn, which seems to make sense. But then if it doesn't match, and I guess if it is equal to the ID, is it's doing it as a debug there.
Right.
I think that's
so
weird.
That message should just go away because,
yeah,
because if it's equal to the ID, then it's an operable.
Yeah. Right. Right. So it wouldn't, and it, I mean, it is a dot debug, which indicates it was probably something he was doing while just trying to trace.
Yeah. So I think that makes more sense out of his comment. Well, maybe not, but yeah, I think that we can probably just drop.
Yeah.
If we understand that when those two things are equal, it means that it's an internal ID.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the other thing that it points to is that there was more than one place where we were doing this DS location validation for different contexts, or in different contexts, and as they started to change in different places, it made their interaction kind of unpredictable. So,
yeah,
we probably need to wrap our knuckles for repeating ourselves.
Yeah. So okay. So actions on this. It sounds like the approach of just adding the ID as one of the valid things in the if clause. Is really the only thing that's needed here. And then maybe just a comment or something in the existing issue that I don't know if it makes sense in that context, but I mean, it is a little troubling that we've got validation happening in a couple places. So it'd be nice to fix that just as a design issue. But I think that might be sort of naturally come out of the issue that Aaron reported about using consistent, treating DS location as an opaque value whenever possible.
Mm. Of course, doing that will remove our ability to cheat right there. So
yeah. Yeah. So this will probably end up just being a temporary patch job. But I guess maybe I think I'll just add that as a comment to FC repo 645 that whatever solution is used here should avoid the should avoid validating DS locations in multiple places as is done today in DL Manager, in default DL Manager and validation utility. Just so we have that tracked. I mean, it might not even, it might just be naturally fall out of this, the implementation of this, but
yeah, I think it's reasonable.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks, Ben, for helping to go through that. and I mean, I honestly was a bit confused too, looking at the patch. I wasn't sure if I was missing something here, but it seemed pretty simple. So I think we can do it for 331. And just if I can't get a hold of Eddie, I might just push it into maintenance and trunk and put a note in the tracker for it. on the topic of 331, are there any other issues that we know of? Again, I did a review myself, but can anybody think of a reason not to proceed with the 331? Is there another issue that's possibly could be slated for inclusion there? Yeah. It's a little harder to get that sense with a group of like four people, but
but easier to achieve unanimity of opinion.
Yes, exactly. well, I'm, and you know, nobody said anything on the list, and I've reviewed it. So I mean, I'm feeling pretty confident that was more of just a sanity check.
I feel like all of this. I mean, not that they're not valuable changes. They clearly are, but I think this is all well within the scope of a maintenance or bug fix release. And I suspect the reason it's been kind of quiet is because everybody's looking at more complex stuff for 3.4.
Right? Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think so. So I put together, I actually linked it off the agenda page there, but I did put together a test plan that was sort of analogous to what we had for 3.3, except not as involved, because I think ultimately we just want to double check that these issues have been addressed. Whether there's automated tests or not, verify that the code's there and check that the issue's been addressed, and then do some automated tests on a couple platforms. I think I will solicit help on this, but it's set up such that people can add their name to any of these to verify and click pass or fail, just like we did with the previous release. So by default, I'm going to be plowing through these myself, but I think I'll send out a message to the list and try to get some help. So depending on how far I can get with that process this week, I may be able to push out a release at the end of this week or early next week.
Hey, I just had a stupid question. I was actually looking through the list of items, and so one of them is to check the Java version.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, does that work with non-Sun JVMs? Like, is that like part of the spec that?
Yeah, actually, there's a couple. System properties that are intended to be defined by any implementation. Mm-hmm. Java.version is the least, or is the most standard. There's actually Java.vendorVersion or something like that, mm-hmm. Which includes things like I remember a while back there used to be, I don't even know if it's around anymore, but like Blackdown and a couple of others implementations out there. And that's where like it would be more analogous to the you know, like the user agent for HTTP headers. Like it's got like the full vendor plus version number kind of info. But Java.version is supposed to be the most free of any vendor specific info.
Oh, okay, cool. No, I did not know that.
Yeah, I see I'm looking at the list in the Java docs, and there's Java version, Java VM specification version, and Java specification version. But it seems like it would be kind of sadistic not to provide your version number to
yeah
your VM.
I think what could also be helpful in this context is having a script or an ONT script or Maven script or something like that that collects all available system information from to help with debugging and stuff. So if someone has a really, really difficult problem, doesn't know what to do, and so the person can just grab the script from the site somewhere, execute it, and send the result to the mailing list.
Yeah. It actually reminds me of something that Atlassian does with whenever they have a way to report issues with their products like Confluence, and their by default, the information that you send them for diagnosing includes the stack trace for whatever the issue is, but also like all the system properties that are defined and other important bits. So this issue was, again, just in the context of running the installer itself, but clearly provokes this other question of, you know, making sure that, I mean, one, making sure that people are actually running the right version of things beforehand, before, you know, failing with some difficult to determine error. And then two is getting sort of diagnostic info. Is it worth creating a feature or request improvement request for this then, Kai?
I don't know. I just a couple of times now it occurred to me that this could be helpful in mailing list discussions. There was, I think, last week there was a question about some dubious MySQL error that happened to be related to I think a Java version.
Yeah, if you run MySQL with Java 5, it turns out the JDBC driver for newer versions is only compiled for Java 6.
Yeah, right. I think for this kind of situations, it could be helpful.
Yeah.
Am I still on the call?
Yeah, you are.
Okay. if we're logging in a possible improvement, I'm trying to find actually the code for the installer and not seeing it immediately, but it might be nice to add an installer option that basically just kind of dumps that a report out of whether we think it will be successful. Does that make sense?
So, so checking things like, well, Java version is already checked, but other issues.
Yeah, I mean, we throw some violent errors if you don't have Fedora Home specified, or we don't have a way to get the Fedora Home, but it might alternately be nice to do a kind of basically encapsulate the sanity checks with a little report function and make that an installer option. Instead of installing, just say, you know, do a pre-flight check in the language of Nagios.
Okay, so, yeah. Like a dry run kind of equivalent? I'm not sure what the Nagios...
Oh yeah, that's exactly what it means. Before you deploy a new configuration of Nagios, it kind of checks to make sure everything is defined correctly, and then it doesn't go forward if it doesn't have valid configurations, and like kind of likewise, you can see running an option that says like checking your Java version, it checks, checking your Fedora Home, it checks, checking your and
yeah. So actually, even like you could have sort of a, you know, when you run the installer, whatever that option, like, you know, some some flag option to do it. You're saying like in a non-interactive way, like essentially before you even start answering questions, there would be some set of checks and a report.
I'm thinking kind of at that level of, I think right now we pick install or the rebuild is after this script is run, but, or maybe I'm misremembering what it's like to run the installer, but isn't there an initial prompt about an action that you take?
Yeah, there's the first one is whether it's a custom install, a quick install.
Right. So with that prompt to say like, or, you know, report on installation requirements, this might not be a good idea. I'm thinking about what the improvement would be.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice to be able to, like, when people are having this kind of problem, to be able to say, like Kai said, you know, give us sort of an environment report of what you're running and stuff, and actually be able to, instead of telling them, now go to the command line and type java-version, go do this, etc., you know, just get all that in one place. And that,
yeah.
I mean, that could be done either as a standby utility or potentially just as part of the installer. Like, I mean, presumably people still have the installer laying around, but if they're running into issues starting up, actually getting Fedora installed, they could do, you know, run the installer dash whatever and get an additional report. Or you're saying maybe it's just an option when you start the installer, to, instead of actually doing anything, just if they didn't provide, I don't know, I'm brainstorming a little here too, but if they didn't provide a flag to do it, then just ask them, like, do you want to do a custom install? Do you want to do an install check or something like that?
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I was thinking.
Yeah.
I guess it just seems natural to me, like, I shouldn't say natural, but it seems like it's nice if the tool that is failing to do what you want it to do gives you a way of trying to interact with it to figure out what's wrong.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think that makes sense. And it could be used even as a way, like, imagine somebody's running into issues with a running Fedora instance. I was just trying to think of like a common way to be able to check these kinds of things. Like, well, maybe it could be different, but it strikes me that if it's able to report on, you know, all the system environment variables that are defined or whatever, all those checks could actually be useful in debugging other issues that occur at
in other context.
Yeah. But there are some that the installer knows that are useful at install time, but I'm kind of wondering if we could piggyback off of it to provide that kind of, well, I guess once somebody gets Fedora installed correctly, they might not keep the installer around. I mean, if they think everything's going well and then, you know, weeks later something happens. But that would be sort of an on-demand kind of environment report option or something.
And this is a, does anyone happen to know where the installer is?
the entry point is
FTRepo
server. Yeah, it's actually under, it's a little confusing because it's not under the FTRepo installer project. Which you might expect, but I think in the initial Maven move, there were probably some dependencies.
Right. Okay. It's in FCRepo server utilities install.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tricky.
Yep. Okay, so we've got a potential for, I mean, I'm trying to imagine this in a way that it would be useful in a variety of contexts. But I don't know. I mean, at least having the installer be able to do that would be pretty nice. But having a utility on the side, I guess if somebody's just downloaded the installer, that's the only utility they have to work with. So adding an additional requirement for them to download something kind of sucks. So it seems natural for the installer to have that capability readily available. And then there's an additional question of like, okay, what happens if somebody's been running with Fedora for a while and we want to get an environment check? Well, we do print some things at the beginning of the server logs. Seems like a pretty natural, when Fedora starts up, which can provide a lot of that diagnostic info, but it actually could provide even more. Mm. I mean, that could be beefed up to sort of speak to this issue as well, just in that context. So, you know, we could tell people instead of go check your Java version, tell me this, tell me that. Or, you know, maybe they're two entirely different processes. But, well, I want to capture this somehow. So for now, I'm going to just do like, write it in the IRC, but installer provided option to give dry run or diagnostic/environment info to aid in install issues. Reporting install issues. That captures the installer side of what we just discussed, right?
Yeah. Is it okay? I'm taking the liberty of creating an improvement issue and
yes, that's absolutely okay for this. Yeah.
And I'm not going to assign it to myself yet, but but I'm gonna type it up here. And I'm going to say that the installer should have access to an environment, a runtime environment evaluation facility. To warn users of potential problems.
Yeah. So is it by saying it should have access, you're sort of opening up the possibility that this is a general utility that
yeah, you've broken my code.
Yep. That was pretty difficult to decode. So there's something else here sort of lurking then. Which is like ability to, you know, once Fedora has been installed to run such utility.
Right. Well, I'm gonna create this issue as the stub, and we can flesh it out as we go. And I don't think this seems unreasonable. Are Kai and Aaron still on the call? Am I?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't checked in a while.
How's our quorum?
Sounds like Kai's here.
Does it seem unreasonable to attach that to 3-4? That seems pretty minor. So.
Yeah,
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. Why don't we? I'll just go ahead and open it because I think it's pretty. Should be fairly free of debate. Okay. So I'm just gonna. Just for the sake of having some sort of log of that's not audio.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, I have to drop off now.
All right, thank you, Kai.
See you. Bye.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
So on to, actually, I should mention a couple things. Probably next week, I just talked with Steve briefly since he couldn't make it today. But Steve, Kai, and myself had a good discussion late after the committer call last week talking about the Fedora 3.3 release process the release management process and how that went, and just trying to figure out like what things we might want to shift around a little this time, what worked well, etc. And one of the big things that came out was, well, there were a couple things, but they were both kind of speaking to the same thing, which was like getting a really good sense of our progress along the way. So we talked about probably defining some sort of milestones rather than just everybody works toward this big set of issues until the last day. We break it down a little bit and sort of divide and conquer. Steve's been sort of thinking about that. We'll probably talk about it next week. Also, we have Dan invited Jonathan Smith from Northwestern to give a JCR discussion as one of our future special topics meetings. So this is the project at Northwestern that's doing a Fedora Java content repository interface. I think they've been using JackRabbit. They're willing to sort of meet us at our time, but possibly using their conference info because they have, I think they have Adobe Connect where we could all go in, and the idea is they could give sort of an informal presentation on what they've been up to, and we could just sort of talk about that. Maybe, you know, what does it mean for the Fedora repository, or just learn generally about what's going on. So that, I think for that, we'll probably have at least a week in advance notice of when that's going to happen, so everybody can sort of be prepared and we can invite some other folks. We've only got a few people on today, so we can't get really the full round robin, but I just wanted to, before we wrap up, just go through and see if anybody had any little updates on what's been going on with the 3.4 at this point. Probably not very much, but Ben, I noticed you had some action on the wiki.
I've been using whatever time I can scrape together to try and work on using Spring as the way to to work in these model-driven service implementations.
Mm-hmm.
So, my two reactions to this right now are one, I'm very excited about the potential of it. So the idea in broad strokes, and I think this will work, is basically to, we have existing in the code base already this stub of this, where we have a service definition reader interface and a service deployment reader interface and a triple generator interface. And I'm trying to rework things so that these, rather than having the single implementation that they have right now, that single implementation be refactored to the implementation for the Fedora system service deployment model 3.0, service definition model 3.0, as kind of types, so that we could introduce a totally different type for the service models, so that we infer that something is a service from a content model saying that it has that, or saying that it is implemented by those, and then using the content model of the object that is indicated as a service deployment or a service definition to figure out how its data should be read. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it has the potential to be something really cool and add, even if it by itself doesn't add a lot of functionality immediately, that it's the gateway for people to really add a lot in the way of contributed libraries to the repository.
Yeah.
The thing that's difficult for me right now, and I think, Chris, that you and I need to have some public correspondence about this, is I know you in your own work about reworking the module system have started work. Your entry point has been the access module.
Yeah.
Which bears pretty directly on the stuff that I was trying to do. So I'd like to open some correspondence up about different ways that we're thinking about doing that stuff.
I think that'd be good. I mean, a couple ideas there. We could schedule a time to see if other folks want to participate in a sort of live discussion about that. Or we could just kick it off on the mailing list and, may go a little slower that way, but at least it'll be out there and people can sort of chime in and participate. I'm up for trying it on the mailing list if,
It seems like we could start there, and then if we get a lot of responses, then we could suggest that we'll schedule some voice exchange somewhere.
That'd be cool. Well, I mean, my initial thought is, I think there will be, obviously with both of these, there'll be some interesting interactions. The part that I'm focusing on the modules side is certainly just the higher level interfaces that today we call modules in Fedora.
Mm.
And it's just sort of trying to concentrate on just getting some sort of conversion so that we're using that framework at some level. But then there's, other questions of like, there's like design questions about, does this, now that we're using this framework, maybe we want to reorganize things a little bit. Given the fact that we're doing 3.4, we're probably not going to be doing a whole lot there right away. But and then there's how can we use dependency injection to help with some of the dependencies that already the modules already have that aren't other modules. like in places where they construct their own, it would sure be nice to be able to take those in.
Yeah. And I think that there are, and I think I said something like this last week, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but I feel a little bit like the existing way that we initialize the pluggable modules with a reference to server is very like a Spring implementation in which the modules, you know, they basically where you have beans that have references to the Spring context that created them, and then ask it for other named beans that they know about.
So there's context aware bean, right? So,
yeah. Phase, yeah. That so that you basically you initialize that bean, and then I think Spring does that initialization with a setter after it creates it. It's not exactly in line with the I think the ideal practices of injection, but it is very very tangible.
Yeah. Yeah, and as we also noted last week, I didn't get a chance to, but one of the things I wanted to do was take a look at the practicality of sort of having backward compatible modules. So, you know, as I mentioned last week, my desire ultimately is to get rid of the module class, the module abstract class and the server class, because they're actually more just relics of the way that it had been done in the past. And while that's a good goal, as you mentioned, if it is impractical, I think we do have some, or if it's not achievable in a relatively short period of time, I think we also have some other options that maybe aren't as full on. But I guess bottom line is, you know, we need a way for 3.4 to make sure any changes we do make in this area are pretty easily backward compatible, or people aren't going to be jumping through hoops to upgrade.
Yeah. This also reminds me that we should send something out to users and developers about, we discussed this at the London meeting, but you know, not unlike the Java version, a question about who is actually re-implementing the manager interface and some other kind of key interfaces out there. Because if everything is located in some relatively commonly used, you know, libraries, we might be able to coordinate with those libraries, you know, about making some more significant changes the way this stuff works.
Yeah. So we got a pretty good response from the Java 6 question. I think that went out to the users list too. It might be worth pinging the whole users list on this one, even though it's, you know, more of a developer thing. It's kind of a lot of our users are developers, so and will have integrated with Fedora.
Well, I think we can probably, and maybe this will motivate it, but if we make it clear that the Fedora 4 arc is about replacing the idiosyncratic module framework with a more generic and portable module framework, or at least a more generic and portable, you know, bean approach. And then, you know, frame our question in terms of what can we do in a 3.4 release that
that
kind of bridges that. Hopefully that will get people involved and maybe not make people feel too threatened by.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. It is, you know, starting it out with, yeah, the, you know, we want to make some pretty significant changes here, and we're very mindful of doing backward incompatible things for 3.4, but ultimately we still need to know, you know, what kinds of customizations people have built out there, and
right,
and so we can talk with you about things.
So, good. There's a nice implied thread in there that says if you don't talk to us about your plugin modules, woo.
Yeah. Yes, please do talk with us.
This is Dan, by the way. I'm in late.
Hey, and I saw you pop in. Yeah.
Yeah, and I am passionate about, or I'm going to get trouble for saying that word. I'm very, very interested in talking the service deployment stuff too. So
cool. So last time a survey kind of approach worked. I know, I mean, a lot of people respond pretty well to that in certain cases. I'm wondering if there's a way to do it, to make this a survey, or if it makes sense just to send a message out. I guess it's, I mean, we're kind of casting a wide net to try to find that small subset of the community who this is actually relevant to.
I think you can do a survey to start. Basically you're asking, do you have any modules that use a plugin interface that you haven't used? Do you have programmers on staff that know how to maintain it? So, for example, we know that there is a few honeycombs out there with modules. Is Sun going to, well, Oracle going to step up to maintaining the code? Don't know.
Yeah.
But at least if we can get the knowledge that the module exists and get the names of the people, then you follow up with, well, let's describe the modules.
Yeah.
See if we can help.
I think that's a pretty, even though it's not like a typical survey kind of thing, it is probably a pretty efficient way of getting the contacts established with anybody who this does apply to, rather than saying respond to all or respond just to me. Just we can throw it in a survey and we'll have a list. I think I can draft something. I'd like to maybe pass it by you guys first. Ben, you've got the questions written. Do you have pluggable impls that extend default impls? Do you have development staff to maintain them?
Those seem like the three really... Well, the key question, because I expect that some of them are going to be like Garrett's manager, that they're going to extend. Yeah, that's a good question. that if they basically decorate one of the default implementations, then as long as we don't depart from the public interfaces, we have some flexibility there. The things that we really need to work with people about are when they have a more or less from whole cloth implementation of something, which I expect are pretty rare, but
ultimately if they have like additional modules that they've plugged in, They have at least one customization, which is one of the existing modules using it as a dependency.
Right. Right.
Yeah, this would help. I mean, and there are certainly things that we already know about in the storage world, and you know, we pretty much know this is going to be an issue we have to deal with for low level store. some of the existing modules that are out there. Okay. Well, as I was saying, I think I'll probably draft something up and just pass it by you guys real quick. See if it makes sense. And then send it out to the users list this week.
Oh, I on the module architecture topic, this might be old news to everybody, but when I started to work on that stuff, one thing that I thought was kind of interesting was I do my development in Eclipse, and I downloaded that Bicycle plugin, which is it does circular dependency analysis on a code on your project and generates a little SVG graph of the classes and their relationships.
Really?
Which is it's kind of nice.
Yeah, where is I've actually recently been using IDEA, but this plugin sounds pretty cool. Where's the URL?
Actually, the easy thing to do will be get it from Eclipse, right? Let me.
While he's looking that up, I got a license for IDEA for all of the Fedora committers. I can email it to you individually if you're interested. All I ask is that you don't pass it along.
Yeah.
So that's that's for their ultimate version.
So they have the community version, and then the ultimate version has some extra things built in, which are nice. So I, Dan had sent that out to me, and I was able to use it just fine. I mean, for a lot of stuff that we do or need to do, you know, like the baseline stuff is already covered by the community edition, but that ultimate edition does provide some other nice capabilities. Notably, the Maven integration is quite a bit better, as I think Andrew and Bill have noted before. But I could definitely confirm that. I mean, it was just cake bringing the Fedora project in.
Sorry, that's the SVN site. This is the the documentation site.
Bicycle. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Requisite dependency viewer for Eclipse. That's really neat because I was doing something similar. I was actually doing a dependency. Checking dependencies on repositories, which sort of feeds into this whole longer term goal of trying to get Fedora to be hosted on Central for our Maven stuff. Because it turns out they're getting a lot more strict about dependencies at Central, and basically anything hosted there needs to be completely buildable through dependencies hosted on Central. So I was trying to figure that out, but no, this is cool. And that bicycle.sourceforge.net also has a nice little preview. It
looks like. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not using it all the time, but it has been helpful in a couple of cases of just kind of getting a view of what all those, the thing that I think is particularly, you know, valuable is when we have things that look like interfaces where an actual implementation is related to an implementation of another interface, which is, you know, the thing that we probably want to get away from, but, which I think was pretty rare actually.
Yeah, it turns out it was funny actually in the module and even in just going through the access module, there are cases where it depends on looking at the configuration of other modules. Because one of the responsibilities of the access modules is to describe repository. Mm-hmm. And it turns out some of those bits of metadata it provides are given by other modules. But the relationship was never defined at an interface level there. That the fact that the access module actually depends on knowing what the OAI provider's description is or title is. Well, it does depend on that. So it, in effect, depends on the OAI provider module. It shouldn't have sort of special access to a particular implementation's configuration. There's a couple options. There's to try to get rid of the dependency completely or to be more formal about the fact that you're depending on it.
Hmm.
Anyway. Any other updates from folks who are on the call?
Not here, Chris.
All right.
Nothing here either.
Well, this is Aaron.
Aaron.
Yes, hi. So I don't really have an update per se, but I think at some point, when Steve is available and we talk about Fedora 3.4, I basically had, compiled a list of cleanup items for 3.4 that would make implementing the high-level storage, basically make Fedora high-level storage ready, more or less, for just developing a, plug-in module. And, I just, at some point, just want to talk the feasibility of that, and how it fits along with the 3.4 schedule, and just take a look at some of the items.
Cool. Yeah. I think that would be good to do with Steve present. As I mentioned, the thinking more about like specific milestones, those might be pushed earlier mm-hmm. in the cycle to prepare for things.
Right.
Yeah. Also, I'll be doing some tracker cleanup this week, and I may maybe pinging folks about various things that have been entered but not yet opened, to see if those are still relevant and whether we already have sort of agreement on whether they should be opened or not. I'm trying to sort of prepare the tracker so that we can go through and determine which specific items are really scoped for 3.4 at that level. Well, I don't have anything else myself. Dan, did you have anything?
No, nothing specific for right this moment. Other than EA, I think Chris found the smoking gun on the Confluent slowdown. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I forgot what it was already, but...
Password caching.
That's right. That's right. The crowd integration. Yeah.
That's not the first time that's happened, right? That the password caching bit us.
Well, in this case, it was that it wasn't doing any password caching at all, and so it was hitting. Actually, it was hitting Postgres just constantly. Whereas before it was an issue that like the cache wouldn't be updated ever.
Yeah, yeah.
It was stale. So. Yeah.
So we achieved some happy medium, I assume.
Well, it was really just a matter of turning caching back on, the issue before us, each application, this was caching at the crowd level, which is sort of our central authenticator. It's responsible for authenticating. All the services really delegate to it. So it was caching at that level between crowd and LDAP. But then the issue before was the applications themselves keeping cached information from crowd. And so those still, you know, if we run into issues with those, they still need to be tweaked, I think, on a per app level. So maybe we're not at, well, if ignorance is bliss, then we're at a happy medium. No. All right. Well, anything else? Anybody? Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
Bye now.
Bye. See you.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye.
The moderator has disconnected.